Namdabo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
What verse number?
Tatayam chavataraste Bhuvo bhara jihirshaya Swanam jananya bhavanam Anudhyanaya cha sakrit Tatayam chavataraste Bhuvo bhara jihirshaya Swanam jananya bhavanam Anujanaya cha sakrit Tata, thus, I am this, cha, and avatara, incarnation, te, your, bhuvaha, of the material world, bada, burden, Jihirshaya, for removing, Swanam, of the friends, Cha, Ananya Bhavanam, and of the exclusive devotees, Anudhyanaya, for remembering repeatedly, Cha and asakrit, fully satisfied. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees, and are wrapped in meditation upon you. Purport, it appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees. Everyone is related with the Lord. He is equal to everyone, and yet he is more inclined to his own men and devotees. The Lord is everyone's father. No one can be his father. And yet no one can be his son. His devotees are his kinsmen, and his devotees are his relations. This is his transcendental pastime. It has nothing to do with mundane ideas of relations, fatherhood, or anything like that. As mentioned above, the Lord is above the modes of material nature. And thus there is nothing mundane about his kinsmen and relations in devotional service. We understand that Krishna's pastimes are being conducted by his yoga maya potency. This is deluding potency. Under her influence, the intimate devotees forget that Krishna is God. And even Krishna himself sometimes forgets that he is God. And he's thinking that he's having various kinds of relationships with his devotees, personal relationships, that he has, that someone is his father, someone is his friend. Where actually God doesn't have any father, he doesn't take birth. That's what a father is. We can figuratively talk about someone being like your father, the way he treats you. But an actual father is someone who gives birth to you. That's definition. And Krishna doesn't have such a person. He doesn't take birth. So, from the philosophical point of view, we may judge that Krishna's having a father is illusion, is imaginary. It's not real. But that's an improper understanding. My having a father is not real. Yes, someone gave birth to my body, but nobody gave birth to me. And, much more importantly, could you ask him not to bang so much, so hard? Ask him not to bang so hard in the kitchen. The apparent illusion of Krishna's pastimes, of pretending to have a father, that is the higher reality. It's the highest reality. We are all actually Krishna's servants. But to be Krishna's servant in an intimate relationship under the influence of Yogamaya is the higher reality. Servitude is simply the common denominator of devotional service. Everyone's Krishna's servant. He's got so many servants. How much service does a person need? Especially if you're God and you don't have any needs. How much service do you require? So something else is desired, not just service. Service is pleasant, pleasing to the Lord. But special pleasure is the intimacy that he enjoys with those who seem to be even superior to him. That is transcendental pleasure. You may come from a part of the world where people eat lots of rice, where the staple of the diet is rice. But rice by itself doesn't have much of a taste. Even if you have to eat a big bowl of rice in every meal, or a big pile of rice, you want something to put on it. Upashechanam. Some condiment, some sabji, something. In the South, they don't like sabjis, so many people. You give them something with actual vegetables in it, they'll pick out the vegetables and throw them away and eat the liquid with the rice. But anyway, you want something on your rice. Everybody, I don't think anybody in the world likes to eat this plain rice. So God's a person. He wants some variety, some special taste. Of course, there's so much variety in the servitude. And that he's getting plenty of in Vaikuntha. And it pleases him. And everybody is fortunate. Those who aren't Vaikuntha serving the Lord, they're so fortunate and they're enjoying life. But there's something beyond that. That Krishna only enjoys in a special realm that even the most of the residents of Vaikuntha don't even know, aren't even aware of such a place. And Krishna's not supposed to be partial. He's not supposed to have any fave friends or enemies. He says that. Samoham sarva bhuteshu nabe dvesho sti na priyaha. I'm equal to everyone. No one's my particular friend and no one's my particular enemy. But in the same statement, he's then going on to say, Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktiya mayi te teshu chapyaham. But those who worship me with actual devotion, not just with a show of devotion, but real devotion. When Krishna says, Bhajanti Bhaktiya, he means the real thing, not to Krishna's mind. Bhakti is something real. It's not just a pretense or a show. In this world, most of the bhakti you see, go on the street, you see so much bhakti advertised. This acharya, that acharya, you know, Rasika acharya, he'll enlighten you with the Bhagavatam. Here's his ugly face, 10 times bigger than life. It's a pretense, most of it. I hope I'm not offending anybody who happens to have his picture on a billboard outside. But most of it is a pretense. Bhakti is not something you just show on the outside to impress people. It's not another tool for manipulation, like other material emotions. You know, the woman cries to get control over the man. She's weaker than the man, so she uses her emotions to control him. I don't mean to pick on women. This is an example. That's material emotion used to manipulate other people. If you think you can use a show of bhakti to manipulate the Supreme Lord to give you what you want, then that's a total perversion of the real meaning of bhakti. Krishna doesn't mean that when he says, ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktiya. He means those who actually love me and are concerned first for my happiness and not concerned about how they can control other people and dominate and be the so-called enjoyer of this world. So, ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktiya, mayite teshu chapyaham. I have a special relationship with these people. And I just said I don't have any special bias toward anybody, but that said, it's still the fact that I deal specially, in a very special way, with those who actually love me. It's only natural. Krishna, he loves everybody, but unfortunately, it's not all reciprocated properly. Krishna is willing to give everything and everything to everybody, but we're living in a material world where people are ungrateful and don't reciprocate properly with Krishna. So what can he do? Yayata mam prapadyante. I'd like to have a loving relationship with everybody, but in this place, this material world, people aren't willing to cooperate. They're rebellious. And therefore, I cannot freely reciprocate with them the same way I do with my surrendered devotees. If there's some inkling of devotion, okay, I can reciprocate with that. Otherwise, I just stay out of their way and let them enjoy their material life. And I'll provide for them in the background through my agents. But if they want to see my face, if they want to know me as a person, they have to begin to develop some love. So that's not being unfair or biased. That's just natural. That's being a person. It's being equal to everybody. But those who have a special positive relationship or attitude toward Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. So Arjuna is acknowledging that. You, in general, the previous verse said that you're arranging for the auspiciousness of everybody by teaching principles of religion and other progressive methods of purification and advancement, spiritual, material and spiritual advancement. You are the original teacher of all these means, sadhanas. And now you've come in this very special appearance. You've come in so many other appearances, but this one is special. This appearance as Krishna himself. Superficially, the purpose of this appearance is to relieve the burden of the earth. But actually, it's not required for Krishna himself to come just to do that. That can be arranged through the material nature. Every 20,000 years or so, there's an ice age. And at least in the northern hemisphere, life as we know it, civilization is destroyed. You know, it becomes impossible to live. People die. Animals die. And everything changes. Material nature makes these arrangements by herself. She can kill millions of people at a time just by, you know, twitching her skin, having an earthquake, scratching herself, and then, you know, then millions of people die. So, with even burden to the earth herself is pretty competent to do that, to get rid of her burden when required. We have some of the agents of the Lord, these little ones, microbes, bacteria and viruses. They can kill off as many people as you want at once. They're better than atomic bombs. In First World War, maybe 20 million people died during the war, and another 15 million people died from influenza after the war, from the flu. Little virus managed to kill off all these people. So relieving the burden of the earth does not require Krishna himself to come. He's got other purposes. Swanam chamanya bhavanam anujanaya cha sukrit. So that your unalloyed devotees, ananya bhavanam, haripo, deyonanat prabhu ki jai. Please, everybody, give him your good wishes for all success and come back here very quickly. Haripo. So that the unalloyed devotees can constantly remember Krishna. Krishna comes and shows himself to give something to remember. To give something to his devotees to remember. That's even more important than killing Kamsa, killing Jarasandha, and a big list of people he kills, or doing other things, straightening out Kubja. Or visiting various devotees. That's nice. But even more valuable than that is that for the rest of Kali Yuga, for Kali Yuga and beyond, devotees will have material to remember, something to remember, and to be able to be Krishna conscious and remember Krishna's pastimes. Anyway, this is what Arjuna is talking about as the Brahmastra weapon comes close. Next verse, he'll actually turn the attention to the weapon itself and what to do about it. Hare Krishna. So, any questions or comments? Yes.
If the earth itself is competent of getting its own burden off, then why, like in the Krishna book, she takes on the form of a cow and goes and sees Brahmas and laments, I'm overburdened by all these demoniac kings.
Normally she's capable. This situation was too much. You know, what happened by the end of Dwarpa Yuga was beyond even Bhumi's Devi's capacity to handle. Therefore she went to Brahma. She wouldn't be bothering Brahma unless it was an exceptional situation. Normally she can take care of herself. Yeah.
What made it so exceptional?
Krishna's arrangement. It's not just the people who lived on the earth. There were demigods coming and demons coming down to earth, you know, in the taking birth in the families of the kings. It wasn't an ordinary earth situation. It was, you know, outsiders coming in and making trouble. Yes. Vishnu Kandibu.
This word Ananya is found in Bhagavatam thousands of times. I did a BBT search in that software. So many places, Ananya Drik, Ananya Bhava, Ananyas.
Yes.
So what is the that much more significant reference of this word, Ananya?
Well, literally just means nothing else, having nothing else. It's you're seeing it in Bahuvrihi compounds. By itself, it just means nothing else. That's just a pronoun. It won't mean anything without a reference, without an antecedent. It's just a pronoun, nothing else. But nothing else than what? Depends on the context. The context here, in most of those cases that you saw, is love, devotion, that is exclusive. Exclusive. No sharing that love with any other object. It all goes to Krishna. That's ananya. It's not directed toward anybody else. It's not that I will show affection to anybody whom can give me what I want, and I'll redirect that affection as useful. No. Exclusive devotion for Krishna, whether he gives you what you want or not. Not that when he doesn't give you what you want, you go to somebody else. No. You stay loyal to Krishna in all situations. That's ananya. You don't give up on Krishna, even if he's testing you. That's ananya. Loyal.
Yes. But the devotees also expect protection and mercy from the Lord. So isn't that a kind of expectation? Like,
yes, and they should give it up. They want to become first-class devotees. They should give up even expecting that. Krishna wants to neglect me, I'll have to accept that. No?
But we see in many instances, like when Nanda Maharaj is attacked by the snake, he calls Krishna to for protection. And many places, like gopis, they call Krishna.
Okay, you can ask. But if Krishna says, no, I'm busy, then okay, Krishna's busy. We can ask for help. We should want help, but we can't demand it. Because sometimes Krishna is helping us by neglecting us. You know, the little boy is asking the father to, you know, pick him up every time he falls and never learn to walk that way. So the father lets him fall down and learn how to pick himself up. So the father's apparently neglecting, but he's trying to teach the child how to learn how to do something himself. So Krishna may be teaching us how to control our mind and senses and become tolerant and humble by apparently neglecting us. And if we're little babies, we get all upset when we're neglected for a moment. But we have to become mature and accept that Krishna may have a reason for apparently neglecting me. He's not really neglecting me. Krishna doesn't do that. He's taking care of his devotees, all the devotees, all the time. But the devotees who still need to be purified, he's sometimes making things hard in order to push them into becoming purified. That's it? Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.